Welcome to FSHD Straight Talk, the podcast where we dive deep into living with FSHD. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach, and I'm on the journey with you. Having FSHD, I understand the challenges it brings to patients and their families. We're in this together, and this podcast is a space where we swap stories, share advice, and talk to experts to get the latest news. There's plenty to say about living with FSH muscular dystrophy, so let's get straight to it. Welcome to another episode of the FSHD Straight Talk Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach, and thank you for being here as we have a big discussion coming up to you. We'll have multiple voices involved here. If you're watching it, perhaps on social media or YouTube, you get to kind of look in and watch in. But those that are listening to on your podcast and your earphones here, we have Allie, Debbie, and Kristen are coming on, and they represent Early Onset International Chapter of the FSHD Society, but that's a sliver of what they're doing. They are representing the entire population and pushing forward of early onset kids that have had diagnosed for FSHD, they have FSHD, and then the non-ambulatory age group, like diagnosed when you were young, now you're 18 and so forth, you're still affected. Those two age groups are massively important in finding a cure to this disease, and these women, as I told them before we hit record, these powerful women are leading the fight. They have other people with them, absolutely, and they talk about that. They have community-based groups that are helping them. They have outside of the FSHD Society, because I think it takes a huge village, man, all helping as well, and they talk about those things. They talk about amazing conversations that they've had, meetings that they've had, meetings to come, like one that's coming in the Netherlands that Allie's going to attend. That's it's a great part of the conversation that we talk about. They talk about going to Washington, D.C. and having that pediatric-focused FSHD meeting with the FDA, making sure that this population of our community is being heard and they're representing them extremely well. The takeaways within this is really things that I heard as I was talking to these women was, you know, be ready. Parents out there, as you listen to this, listen to the key things, the roadmap. They talk about that they're trying to lay for all of us that have kids with this disease or could have this disease. It's massively important. Other takeaways for sure are there's a learning curve, which leads to misdirection. So they talk about, these women talk about, well, you know, we concentrated on something we thought we had to, and turns out we didn't have to. And then now that's the misdirection because of the learning curve. And they're helping to kind of flatten that curve a little bit as they move forward. So it's definitely a connection, communication within the group. And that's huge within this episode. So imagine if you have, you know, a group, a community, and there's one part of it that's represented very strong and another is barely represented. But yet you have this loud cry and strong front to push it forward to be more recognized. And within that front is Allie, Debbie, and Kristen. And they have kids with FSHD. And we've had Allie on in the past as well as Kristen. And we've even had Allie's son, Sam, on. Remember that episode vividly. And we talk about their kids and being a caregiver for their kids and like getting this front row seat to this. So imagine you have that powerful force that kind of drives the attention forward. And I think that's happening more and more, especially the things that they talk about that they've been involved over this last year, things to come within even yet this year in November as Allie goes to the Netherlands to talk there. And what's even coming with certain studies before the year's out or just as 2025 starts. There is pinpoints of hope we talk about, and they're threading them together very well. And lastly, listen for this. Minutes matter. As I listen to their answers and listen to the passion in their voices of pushing forward and how much energy they put into this, you know, keep in mind they have other parts of their lives, jobs, other family, etc., but they're putting a lot of energy into this. I felt a little bit of that anxiety, that little bit of like, we got to hurry. We're running out of time. It's very similar to when I was diagnosed and it felt like someone hit a stopwatch and I, you know, like a countdown of some type. And I knew right then I was running out of time. Never was conscious of it before until then. And this is like magnified hundreds of times past that feeling for me. And I feel it right in my chest. And when Kristen says, you know, minutes matter, it hit me hard. Like, that makes sense to me. I think it'll make sense to you. So I hope you enjoyed this conversation as we talk about early onset, the non-ambulatory community within FSHD. And Allie and Debbie and Kristen, they represent it well. So I hope you enjoy the conversation. Hi, everyone. I've got some exciting news for you from the FSHD community. If you've ever felt the unpredictability of FSHD or wish there was more accurate research and information out there, and I know you have, then listen up. I'm thrilled to tell you about Better Life FSHD, a groundbreaking new research platform from the FSHD Society that's changing the game for those of us living with FSHD. Better Life is your one-stop hub for tracking symptoms, accessing personalized resources like articles and videos relevant to you. And the best part, as you take surveys and track your symptoms, you provide FSHD researchers with better data to understand this complex, understudied disease. And a better understanding can lead to faster treatments, something every one of us can get behind. So head over to betterlifefshd.org and join the study. It only takes a minute to get signed up. Together, we can change the future for everyone affected by FSHD. I've done this. It's a simple process. I challenge you to do the same. Again, that's betterlifefshd.org. Now let's get back to the show. So as promised in this episode, we are concentrating on a population that seems to be left out. We've talked about this briefly in other episodes or even concentrated on certain episodes. We've had Allie on the show in the past, Kristen on the show in the past. I don't know if we've had Debbie on, but we've all are here together to talk about, I think, what needs to be talked about more and more and more. And that is, you know, it's early onset, yes, but there's other parts of the population that these women represent. And that's what we're talking about today. It's very important that you're tuning in. I'm glad that you are. So let's kind of go around, I guess, the screen, as we say. We have Allie, Debbie, Kristen. Do you guys want to, you know, introduce yourself and maybe your connection to the FSHD Society? Maybe we'll start there.
Okay, I'll start first. My name is Allie Rhodes. So I live in Tucson, Arizona. I have a son who's 19 years old. He was diagnosed at 6. He was in a wheelchair full time at age 13, and now he is an adult non-ambulatory FSHD individual. We all run the parent chapter of the FSHD Society, but beyond that, our focus is probably 75% on educating and advocating for clinical trial inclusion for those populations you were just talking about, the left out populations, the pediatrics, the non-ambulatory adults, and probably the other 25% is support and education for the other parents out there whose child have maybe recently been diagnosed, or just to support each other if something comes up, like how to navigate, you know, life as a child or a teen or a young adult with FSHD. So that is our focus for our group. And we've been doing it. Kristen and I have been doing this for maybe about 4 or 5 years. Debbie came on about a year and a half ago. And we have been very involved in conversations with pharmaceuticals, with regulatory, the FDA, and as I mentioned earlier, with also with the patient community. And I'll let Kristen and Debbie introduce themselves. Go ahead, Kristen.
So Kristen Zwickau, I live in Boston. I have a daughter who is now 13, almost 14, diagnosed at 6, spontaneous mutation, does not run in our family. And so got involved with the initiative with getting kids involved in clinical trials with Allie when she called and told me that the kids would not be in clinical trials. So, you know, there's no greater cause. There's, you know, we can't allow this population to be left behind. So it was a passion project that I knew I had to pick up and run with her. That's the connection with the FSHD Society. June was actually the first person I ever spoke to post Caitlin's diagnosis. So I will be forever indebted to her for picking up the phone and having a conversation with me and meeting me for coffee and, you know, calming me down a little bit and knowing that we weren't alone out there.
Yeah.
And I am Debbie Eggleston. I have a 15-year-old daughter, Maggie, who was diagnosed getting close to about 2 years ago. And she had postural problems. I kept going to the doctor, and it was, you know, a bit of a challenge to get her diagnosed. And now she has some weakness in her legs. I am also a physical therapist, had been working part-time, and something had to give. I couldn't help my daughter, advocate for kids, raise three other children, and keep working. Excuse me. So I quit my job and was extremely relieved, happy that these two women had been advocating so much and so well for our children, because I honestly don't know what I would have done if I didn't have this opportunity to do something for my daughter, for our children. So I'm very grateful for that and all of the support that we have received by others and how far we've come in the last few years.
So it sounds like, you know, Allie, you're maybe on the forefront with this group. And when you were originally there talking about the involvement, I try to key in, you know, on people's answers. And one thing I couldn't help but notice, but a little bit right of like that sigh that like, man, it feels like it's been right. It's like a battle. This is a battle. This is difficult. And that's not even the right word. There's gotta be one worse than that to use. So when you're within that battle that you are all in now together, we all are, should be, as a community, where does that start? Is it with the FDA? Are you like, how is that, in lack of a better term, like marketing your cause, you know, advocating for it? What is that like going up against, for instance, the FDA and so forth to get this group within clinical trials? It seems like a very difficult task.
Yeah, it is a difficult task, and the learning curve is very steep because it's a very complicated bureaucracy that we're sort of facing, and we've had to learn all this along the way. Luckily, I have Debbie and Kristen. We all have our own strengths, and we've all come together very well and gelled as a team to sort of tackle different aspects of it. But primarily, we've learned a lot about sort of three-pronged. We have the regulatory FDA portion of it. We have the sponsors, the pharmaceutical portion of it that we're tackling. And then also the payer reimbursement insurance portion that we've learned. So our message is very clear that the way the clinical trial process works, and we've seen this in SMA and Duchenne, if efficacy or safety data hasn't been proven in a clinical trial, then it's very difficult for first FDA to label the drug for everybody to be included to receive the drug, and then also for payer reimbursement. So we sort of have to attack, we're sort of attacking this on all different levels. And we just want the community to understand, because we were very naive. I know I was, and I think Kristen and Debbie were as well, that you think that if a treatment's approved, you're going to just be able to go to your doctor, get the drug, you know, prescribed to your child or to your loved one if they're an adult, and that's going to be the end of it. But it's not that simple. We need safety data in clinical trials. We need to know that it's effective in clinical trials, and then we also need the drug labeled so that it can be prescribed to them, and that so the insurance can pay for it. And I think that really is our message, that if we don't get involved and we don't put pressure on regulatory, on insurance, and on the pharmaceuticals to expand their inclusion criteria, then God willing, there is a treatment down the road that we have, that all populations in the FSHD community has access to that treatment.
And within that, you attended the first ever pediatric summit last year in California. Can you talk about that in Sonoma?
Yeah, so we have partnered with Solve FSHD and Eva Chen, and she's been very gracious with her time. She's jumped right on board with the pediatric, she's champion of the pediatric cause. And she brought together all the pharmaceuticals in the space, and the three of us, we went to Sonoma. We gave a presentation about our children, and then we listened to them about what will it take to get pediatrics and early onset into clinical trials.
Do you feel like you made headway, momentum, pushing in that right direction with that?
Kristen, you want to jump in here?
Yeah, so one quick note back on the reason for the mm-hmm. involvement and why people are getting involved and getting behind the pediatric and the early onset is that there is a belief both in the side that we've heard from the scientific community as well as from other researchers and doctors that if you can put it into the kids because they have a more severe progression, you will get the effectiveness of the drug faster. So this could actually increase the time. If you look at the time it took for Fulcrum to figure out whether this was working or not, they were using a set of patients that don't progress very fast. So how do you improve effectiveness when you have patients that are not progressing quickly? But when you can look at a child and see, and we've got people who've done clinical have done research on see in a matter of 3 months or less the progression in a child. So if you can see progression in a child in 3 months or less, then you're going to see the effects of a therapy a lot faster than you're going to see the progression of an adult that's taking years to progress.
It's also less expensive because they are children with smaller bodies. So it's less expensive because of the dose and also because you need the shorter time for the clinical trial.
So this isn't a selfish mom saying this is what we want done because it's our children. This is actually a benefit to the whole community that's been ignored.
And also, we all know, you know, the earlier intervention, the better outcome. You know, if you can get an intervention when they're young and still have a lot of muscle, whether they're 18 or 8, and right. preserve that muscle, you know, they're going to have a better quality of life.
Yeah. It seems like, though, then, Kristen, that's kind of common sense to say, well, then we should start with the kids. Mm-hmm. So why, how come it feels like it's the opposite?
Because the risk, people don't want to take the risk. It's risky to go into kids. It's risky to do something different than what's been done all along. Ali put out a video in about, was it 4 months ago, where it was right in everyone's face of, if we don't take risks, then the outcome's always going to be the same. If we don't take risks, we're going to continue to just allow our more severe patients, whether they're adults or children, to let's call it what it is, go towards, you know, a shortened life. Like there's a lot of people with respiratory issues. The disease is so severe in so many cases, but we don't talk about it. We never have as a community. We've always been like, oh, it's you just get muscle weakness. Mm-hmm. No, there is a severe health complication with this disease. And there are countless patients every year dying from respiratory complications at an early age. And we don't talk about it as a community, and we don't want to stress how severe this disease is. If we would bring that up and talk about it, and we would start to use some of the patients who can help us solve this thing a lot faster and not just ignore them, we may be able to solve this faster. I mean, I'm not a scientist, so I don't know for sure, but that's kind of what our research and all the talks we've had with everyone has led us to that. But for years, we've just talked about this disease being muscle wasting, a nuisance. You can't lift your arms. Well, that is not even the beginning of the severity that so many patients are facing from a health perspective that we don't talk about as a community.
Yeah, I mean, that's just scratching the surface, right? I mean, that's the same diagnosis I received along with many others I've talked to, either through this format of the podcast or outside of it. And it's always this, well, it's not life-threatening. It's life-shortening. I still don't know the damn difference. So, and then, of course, I got the speech of, well, it might not necessarily be the FSH that gets you. It's going to be something that FSH caused that'll get you. That's nice to know, right? So it's like stumble.
Yeah. It's if you didn't have FSHD, then you wouldn't be in that situation. I also just want to bring up quality of life. I mean, it is absolutely true that it affects, you know, respiratory issues, increased fall risk. Unfortunately, there is a, I think there have been some suicides in this community. We're talking about quality of life as well. And these are children. I just would like people to think about what was your childhood like, your children's childhoods. We're talking about children who have to deal with this daily. And I will tell you that out of the three of us, my child has the most mild case. But it's like, I want to cringe saying mild because it is absolutely devastating. And we tried to think about this one day, when we were thinking about her progression. Can't think of a single activity that she does where FSHD does not affect her in some way.
Right.
So quality of life is huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the quality of life goes to what you alluded to there with the suicide rate. We all know, I'm sure it's up in the community compared to others. It's that, you know, hopelessness feeling that this is it. So, and I can't imagine if I found my diagnosis out when I was a lot younger, the things I got to experience, I'm very grateful for. Hence why it irritates me that there's so many young people that won't be able to experience those things. If it's physical, you know, sports or whatever, or just the simplicity of getting up, putting on your own clothes and heading out the door. Right. I mean, or, you know, Allie, I remember when Sam was trying to get his driver's license, just those things that so many young people take for granted. And the parents of those young people, I think, take for granted. Is some of the reluctance, though, maybe, you know, I assume, like, if you want children to be in a clinical trial, there has to be some type of parent approval. I'm completely naive to the process. That's why we have the experts here.
There has to be consent. Yeah. And at a certain age, the children have to give assent that they're agreeing to it.
Okay.
As well.
Is that a hurdle? Is that being a hurdle, or is it more the hurdle that there's just not clinical trials available, or both?
Both.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think both. First, we need to get the pharmaceutical companies to agree to go under 18. And mm-hmm. we need them to agree to go into the more severe patients, the ones that can't walk, so that they get, you know, we're trying to convince them to do like another arm of a clinical trial so these folks can get in these trials so that we know. Mm-hmm. But first we have to have, you know, maybe if we build it, they will come, but they can't come if there's no building. And right now, nobody has agreed, you know, and there is some complications when you go under 12, they have to have a juvenile toxicology report and things like that. And we want to also say very clearly that we want to make sure it's safe. Like, we're not advocating for, but once safety is found in a treatment, once mm-hmm. they've approved safety, then there's no reason to at least go down to 12 and up, in our opinion, you know. And there's absolutely no reason not to include all the adults that are more severe and don't meet their, like Kristen was saying, their very thin inclusion mm-hmm. criteria for these clinical trials right now.
Yeah, talk about that too, that area you said they're early, you know, they're young adults, but they're not included. For those that don't understand that, maybe a little bit me, like, what do you mean they're not included? Like, why wouldn't they be? Because of the severity?
Severity. Like, if you look at any of the inclusion criteria for any sponsor that's in the space right now or looking to come into the space, they have to be able to walk, you know, 10 meters. They have to be able to do, you know, the inclusion criteria is very limited. Mm-hmm. So if they're more severe, then they don't even have the opportunity to go into a trial. And then that goes back to what I was speaking with before. So there's a lot of adults also in the FSHD space that aren't included in any clinical trial. And that leads to, when they go to label it, even if they get a label to say, this could be given to anybody with FSHD, let's say they get a broad label. Well, then when they go to insurance will say, well, efficacy hasn't been proven on anybody who is non-ambulatory, so my insurance won't pay for it, right? Or the data isn't there. And this has happened, and this isn't just theory. It's happened in Duchenne's, it's happened in SMA, it's happened in other diseases, that if those populations aren't included in clinical trials, either then it's not labeled for them, or mm-hmm. insurance has a reason to say, no, we're not going to pay for it. And these, you know, these treatments are very expensive. And if insurance won't pay for it, you might as well not have a treatment, because, you know,
it'll be ridiculous.
Not very many people have, you know, $200,000 laying around to pay, you know, month after month.
Right.
And the community needs to be aware, because I've had people say, well, I'll just go do a fund me to get it. This is going to be $3 million in just That's what the Duchenne's treatments are costing. So we can only assume we're going to be in that same bracket. How are you going to go fund that every year?
It's impossible.
Because, it's impossible. It sounds terrible.
Yeah, exactly. That's just not going to happen. That is a little bit naive thinking it's going to be, not that expensive, a couple thousand. No, we're, like you said, we're talking a couple hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars. That's insane. So then you try to get right government involvement, I assume, or whatever direction seems to kind of get a foothold into changing that thinking. Kristen, you said that, or I have a list of questions you guys were so gracious to give me. You went to a focused FDA meeting in Washington, D.C. Is that right? I'm very interested in that.
Yes. Yeah, so I went to a pediatric roundtable to discuss rare disease within with the FDA. And so there was a couple of sponsors in the room, but for the most part, it was the FDA was there on the panel, and then there was a lot of advocacy groups in the room. There was some sponsors in the room, and there were some researchers in the room. And it was all focused around how do we change the narrative? And in years past, in the legacy thinking in the FDA has been, we don't want to touch the children because it's going to hurt them. And now they're starting to realize in the formation of their thoughts are changing drastically, where they're saying, wait a minute, we're actually hurting them more by sitting them out. And they want kids in clinical trials once the safety has been proven. They want them. And if it is in a severe situation, they're actually okay not having safety proven yet. I mean, if a kid is left with no choice, they're either going to die or they could potentially have a drug that works. The outcome is going to be the same no matter what. So they're open to those conversations, and they want pharmaceuticals / sponsors to come to them with a plan that is inclusive of that. We have not had that in our clinical trial designs yet for our community. We even have companies that have gone into phase two, and they still don't have a pediatric plan in place. So we want to urge the community to have a plan. Once you get safety underway, we should be having the groundwork for the pediatric clinical trial getting ready to go. So when you come and round phase two, we should be starting another clinical trial with kids. And it doesn't need to be that many because the population isn't huge. So you don't need to do hundreds of patients in these smaller phased clinical trial. The other thing the FDA talked about was that they don't think a one size fits all clinical trial is right for rare disease. And we saw that with Fulcrum, right? Patient meeting the criteria versus the criteria coming to the patient. So take a baseline of the patient and see if there's improvement. And they're okay with those trial designs. They actually want them for rare disease because it is, as we've seen with our own disease, a clinical trial is tricky to design that meets the criteria of the vast differences in our population. If you meet anyone with FSHD, there's some commonalities, but there's a lot of differences from progression to the way that what area of their body is being affected more than another. No patient is 100% the same as another. Mm-hmm. And they understand that. And that was the whole thing was the FDA saying, talk to us. Let's do some more creative clinical design and let's get larger populations involved than just the perfect patient.
So involvement is a key word. Getting people involved will help that. So it sounds like you're putting together what media campaigns, things like that. We all know what that can do. Ice bucket challenge, live strong wristband. I mean, the list goes on, right? We've all seen it. We've all lived it in other communities looking for some type of, treatments, money to raise to attack these things. What is the media campaign that you guys are thinking about rolling out, or what does that look like?
We want to do a campaign that is just everything we've talked about today in bringing to light the fact that the community involvement in us stating what is the appropriate thing for our disease needs to be addressed, and that as patients, we have a voice and we need to be heard, and we can't just sit back and let everybody else do the work because they're not living with this disease every day. I challenge people working on this disease to spend one day with my child to see what it's like and live a day in her shoes, go to school and see what it's like to be the only kid wheeling around. So, we all need to lean in and let them know what that life is like because they don't live it. We also need to lean in and say, what are the things that are most important to us as a community with regards to what a good therapy looks like? And that can look different for many different patients, right? And understanding the different progressions or stages that patients are at and what a therapy means to them. Having that vocal voice so that they also know what audiences are out there, who's most engaged, who's willing to take more risk than others. It's the more we can talk about where we're at, the more the community and the people working on this disease are going to understand what's important. And the FDA is willing to listen. We were always told that the FDA looks at things one way and they don't. And our voice is so important in that. And that's why we're working on a campaign, but then we're also working on putting a voice of the patient forum together that is around the patients for the early onset. And this is not just about the kids. The early onset is about anyone who is diagnosed pre age 10 and had symptoms. And their deletion sizes are 5 and below, Ellie?
Yeah, I think, there's different opinions on that. But the clinical definition is, facial weakness before 5 and shoulder involvement before 10. But early onset, like Kristen said, is at a young age, progress rapidly. And they may be in their 20s now. But again, they're still left out and they still need to be brought along into these, clinical trials and to these treatments so that they can get an approved drug paid for by insurance along with everyone else. But I just wanted to piggyback on what Kristen said about how important the patient voice is. And we've learned this from SMA and Duchenne, the parents and the patients and the families advocacy is what pushed a lot of those drugs over the finish line with the FDA. They saw the videos, they listened to the parents. And they said it, Peter Marks said it in an article, we were kind of on the fence about this treatment, but we listened to the parents and we watched the videos and that really is what tipped the scales. So if you think you don't have a voice and what the advocacy and what we're saying doesn't matter, you're wrong. It does matter. And it has mattered in the past and it will matter with FSHD.
I just want to mention too, that I really do feel like there are a lot of us parents and children who are just waiting and hoping for this opportunity. Some people, when a clinical trial is available, maybe not everyone will choose it, but there's so many of us who are ready for it. And just, I guess, an example we had, there was a meeting in Virginia recently and a few families went and there was a family, a mom who hadn't flown in 20 years, a 13-year-old boy who had never flown. He's non-ambulatory. They had to take a layover, and then they flew back the next day with the layover. And with FSHD, you're tired. I feel like that shows dedication. We need this, and we are trying to do whatever we can to get this for our population.
Yeah, there's a lot more hurdles than the average person. Let's face it. You just talked about it, Debbie, just the travel alone. Everything is more difficult when you have this disease, especially at the young ages. We're seeing that. I know the voice of the patient worked as the general population, lack of a better term, for the FSHD society, community. They did that. It was impactful. The fact that you're attacking that side of it with this population of people that have been overlooked, right? It's spot on. You're putting pressure, hopefully on pharma, to kind of say, oh, wow, this is, someone told me once, and maybe it's a little insensitive, but basically it's emotional currency. You're trying to show people that this is affecting people. This isn't just cells and things. There are faces behind that. Debbie, you had a participation, I suppose, in more of a kids focused in part of the Connect conference and Denver was really about the kids. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I was really excited about that. So with the FSHD Society, we worked to, for the first time, have children there at the Connect conference. It was a small group of kids, but they had fun. They interacted with pharmas. And so one of the events was to make a piece of artwork. And so each kid, I believe, had about two representatives working with them. And so I think, I hope it was impactful. As we're talking about some of the difficulties, I mean, to be honest, even just doing something like that is hard. It's hard to reach across a table to get a marker. And they were talking about other aspects of their lives. I know Ellie's son Sam had been talking about the difficulties of driving and having accommodations and the vehicle that he needs. So I think it was a great opportunity. I'm grateful for the society for doing that, and Solve helped with that as well, the families and the representatives who were there. And we just need more of that. We need to come together, and we're hoping to maybe have in every, like, the alternate years to get together as a families and let these kids have fun, have peer support, and continue to advocate.
Yeah, that's actually interesting when you said that, Debbie. That was the first thing that popped in my head. Like, maybe it has to be its own standalone connection with the kids. The nonprofit that I w work with here in the Wisconsin area, they're called Team Up with Families, but they have a camp for kids that, have whatever the disability may be. It could be muscular dystrophy or so forth. And this camp also involves their siblings, and it's like one of the only ones in our area that that's more family inclusive instead of just, a child that is dealing with the disease. It's also their siblings or their other parts of their family.
Yeah,
So
that's
something like
true.
that,
Everyone does. Yeah, and I'll tell you that my son went as well. My Maggie, who has FSHD, and my son Sam, and I went. He had a blast. And it really was great for the kids to be able to spend time together and hang out. And that was something that Maggie lacked for a while. She had met some adults recently with FSHD, and that was wonderful. And she really enjoyed having some time with other kids who understand the challenges, the daily challenges of this disease.
And it's also just good for the entire FSHD population. I heard so many times, like, wow, I've never seen so many kids here. And in some families, it depends on how it runs in their family. Some of them have never seen kids with FSHD, and they think it doesn't exist. Even within the FSHD community, they think it only happens later on in life. So for all of them to see it, it's sort of a rallying point to say, "Wow, wow, look at all these kids. They're also affected. I didn't realize that."
I think a lot of people have been approaching us too, thinking, "Oh, maybe I'm like in, I want something for myself, but really what I'm caring about is I'm thinking about my kids. Maybe my kids have it, or maybe my grandkids." So hopefully we can keep getting stronger as a community to help everybody with this disease. And Connect was really nice too for us adults, as parents, to be together and hang out socially, and also just to give some support too, because it's certainly challenging as a parent to see your child progress and progress and progress and lose abilities and activities and hobbies.
And Tim, one point that we want to make sure is loud and clear is that this isn't about us against pharma or pressure on pharma. This is about all of us coming together as a community, having conversations, and not just making assumptions about one population over another. And education, educating pharma, educating FDA, educating ourselves on what this disease is all about and how we get a broad-based participation in the exploratory therapies that are out there, and giving people that option and choice. But it's not, we don't want to create a us versus them. We want to create a let's have conversations, and let's stop, not talking. Let's talk about the good, bad, and the ugly, and have the conversation that pushes things forward quickly. And use all the tools we have to make progress as fast as possible, and not throw up smoke screens or make assumptions that are not entirely the right assumptions.
And we do want to work as a team. I think that there could be some things that we could do to help them, help our children. We've had when in Sonoma, the barriers mentioned were FDA, outcome measures, natural history. So we took that as our homework. This is what they feel like they need, and so we're going to try to work on that to help them. One representative has said it would be great to see a video. What What does the progression look like? So I spent a ridiculous amount of time creating a progression video of my daughter and, sent it to them. So we'll, if you have a task, we'll do what we can. So we definitely have to be a team.
So it's more like communicating what they need. It's not like Kristen said, it's not a us against them. It's more of like, let's communicate with you to let you know what we're looking for. So what do you need from us? Sounds like to keep moving it forward. Is that more accurate than a battle, so to speak?
I feel like it there is this fight with advocacy. There's a fight. There's so much that we have to do, but yes, we have to work as these are people we're counting on to help our children. So we will do whatever we can to help them help our children.
And I want to mention as well, all the other nonprofits have been very supportive of us. Solve FSHD has been very supportive. I've talked to Terry over at Friends of FSH. They've been very supportive. Chris Carino Foundation, my FSHD, we call, Peter Jones all the time and ask him for his advice and things. And they've all been very supportive of the pediatric early onset population and given us a lot of advice and a lot of support. And we really would like to thank them because this really is an all-in effort. It's not just the FSHD Society or us three parents or whatever. It's the whole community. It's for all of us.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, Allie, because even within the community, sometimes it feels like for whatever reason there's like a pitting match between one or the other, and that's just ridiculous to me. It should really be a community effort, even if you are doing your, whatever your nonprofit base is or educational base is. It doesn't matter. Should it be all connectivity? We shouldn't be in silos, and not sharing. And it sounds like your group is, breaking those barriers, making sure that there is communication and help. Wherever you can get it. And what parent wouldn't do that, right? You're going to go through hell and back again if you have to get it done. And if that means communicating or making the tough conversations easier or so forth, you're going to do it. You're very driven. There's no question. With it sounds like there's been good meetings, right? That have happened. That's great. You also all noted that you have an upcoming pediatric ENMC in the Netherlands in November. So that's not far off.
Right. So I was through the FSHD Society in June. They wanted a parent representative. So it's a couple of days in the Netherlands. So I'm traveling there at the end of October, beginning of November. There's a bunch of clinicians, researchers there, and it's all focused on pediatrics the entire weekend. And then I will give a presentation on Sunday from a parent perspective and speak
That's
mainly largely about what we're talking about right now.
And who will all be in that meeting with you? Who are you speaking to? What impact is that going to give?
So it's a lot of clinicians, all the normal, faces of FSHD, Dr. Statlin and Katz and, the whole crew, and then a bunch of European clinicians and researchers. I'm not sure if any farmer's going to be there or not, but basically they're just talking about pediatrics and pediatric care and then the way forward to a pediatric treatment.
Kristen or Debbie, any comments within that meeting that's coming up?
No, just super excited that we were asked to the table, right? I mean, it's like the fact that Allie is going is just absolutely amazing to have that voice there. And that's what Allie was referencing earlier, that it's a continuous drumbeat that we're doing, that we're starting to see that we're being invited to meetings that typically patients and or advocacy groups that are very niche focused are not being invited to. And that allows that opening of that door of them to understand and learn of a population that they typically don't have as much knowledge about firsthand of people who are living with it.
And this wasn't happening 2 or 3 years ago. So I am so grateful that people have heard us, and there are all these conversations about children now.
And not just the meeting, but also like an upcoming pediatric Move Plus study that looks like it's starting soon. I'm sure that strikes interest in other parents listening. So what can you talk about that, or what do you know about that study coming up?
So this is a study, you heard about their other MOVE study in Children were invited to that under 18, but it wasn't geared toward them. Like the outcome measures and stuff weren't really they weren't really they didn't capture the children's movements and how they the physical therapists weren't really concentrated on children. So now it's just kids. It's a 2-year study and it's expedited. Instead of going once a year, they'll go every 6 months. And MRI is included, which is huge because MRI, they were excluded from the old MOVE study. Under 18 didn't do MRI. They're going to do MRI and they're going to do some blood samples and some other things. And it's just going to be concentrated. It's 80. They're looking for 80 kids. They're getting the contracts and things together right now with the CTRN. So that call will come out to parents soon to get involved. And natural history really is important in that so they know how the disease progresses. And like Kristen alluded to earlier, kids progress more quickly. They just do. You know, their muscles are smaller, normally it's more severe. So this will capture that. So if you can get involved, please get involved. And Jeff Statlin and Michaela Walker, they're heading that up. And that should be, I think it should be in place soon, hopefully by the end of the year.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, because we're entering into the fourth quarter here, so that's good news to have it set up and hopefully ready to go before that. That is promising for sure. What's then, do you feel like the hope then of that? So to get that data that you're all in search of to help this next step move forward.
Yeah, the data is important. And the other thing that we've been asking for as well is not to sit on the data for 2 years. You know, as they get the data, pump it out to the sponsors and to the pharmaceuticals so that they get it more quickly than 2 years. Because, you know, 2 years is in a kid's that's progressing with FSHD, they can change a lot. They can go from walking to non-walking or get some very severe respiratory or other functional problems. So we're asking them to get the data out quickly so that they can start acting on that data.
Yeah, we can't stress enough that minutes matter. Minutes matter. And we don't have time to do 10-year studies. We don't. If that's the attitude, then we're just saying to the kids of today, sorry, this is going to be your life and we are not here to help you. You participate today for paying it forward, and for us, that's not good enough. I pay forward, but we can also work today.
I love the fact that you said minutes matter. You know, as I have interviews with people, there's like certain key things that I listen for. That definitely stands out to me. I think that is a massive theme. Maybe that's really the title of this, right? Minutes matter. Let's like move quickly. I can sense that there's naturally then frustration. Anytime that there's pressure of time or anything, even anything you do in daily life, right? There's always going to be some frustration involved. So what's been kind of the most, this is, I guess, a general question for all of you, whoever wants to jump in. What's been kind of like your top list? Like, okay, this has really been frustrating, this part that you wish was a little smoother. Or is the
A
list too
roadmap.
long?
I'll go, Allie. A roadmap.
The
We've hit so many walls. We've had to debunk so much that we've been told. We've had to learn so much that we've learned. And it feels like there's a roadmap. And Allie and Debbie and I always talk about like someday we're going to sit down and write the book so that other parents don't have to go through this.
Would you echo that, Allie, Debbie?
Yeah, certainly it's been a steep learning curve, and you know, minutes matter, and we've wasted our time chasing things that didn't matter because we thought they did matter. And then we later realized that, oh, this wasn't as important as we thought. So then we've had to refocus. But we've learned a lot, and that's just part of the learning process, but it's just frustrating and heartbreaking that while you're trying to learn, your kid is deteriorating, you know. So it has been a learning process, and we are thankful for all the people that have helped us along the way, and a lot of people have. You know, if we're a turtle sitting on a fence pole, we didn't get there by ourselves. A lot of people have helped us, so we appreciate that. But we still have a lot of work to do, and we just really want the community educated that it takes all of us, and we all need to be involved. And when we come out, we ask you for things and saying, hey, can you send us pictures of your kids and put this video together? Or can you get involved in, you know, this upcoming, hopefully we'll have a listening session with the FDA from caregivers and parents. The last one that the FSHD Society did in 2020, only 3% were under 18 and only 7% were caregivers or responded to the survey. So this is going to be 100% early onset, either adults or kids and caregivers. And this is a population they've never heard from before. So when that ask goes out, please respond, because it is important and the FDA needs to hear from us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So with frustration, flip it over. I like to think then there's gotta be hope in there somewhere. So what's the hope? It's obvious, right? Treatment, cure, things like that. But even if you slice it up a little bit, more like a timeline, so to speak, like we know cure in a month is not it, but what's like the goal? What's like the slice of hope in this next end of quarter for this year, maybe as we enter the next year, right? Because then you can thread those little pinpoints of hope from here to there, to here to there, and maybe you kind of keep it together, so to speak, right? Keep the mission going. So the question I have is like, what are your like pinpoint hope? Like, what are those markers you hope as you keep going forward?
Well, I think we've been stitching together a lot of stuff for the last year, and we're just gonna keep that thread going. But we hope that we get this approval to go before the FDA for the patient-focused drug development for early onset. We hope that that pharmaceutical listened, hear what we're saying, and that they need to diversify their clinical trial inclusion criteria and drop down the age and include some more severe patients. And then we're always here to support the community and the parents. Like, we hear from parents all the time who have questions, and we're all at different, you know, I reach out to like Arlene Cohen, who has a son who's older than my son. How did you do this? Kristen reaches out to me. Other parents reach out, and we can support each other so that we don't have to keep making the same mistakes with our kids over and over. And so, you know, that's always like our underlying foundation of supporting each other. And Kristen and Debbie and I, we work really well together, but we've also become really good friends, and we've become really good, you know, battle buddies, so to speak, that when one of us falls down, the other one says, all right, you know, we hit a brick wall, and we're just like, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. And then the other one will come in and go, it's going to be okay. Get up. Let's keep going. And we're like, okay, we brush ourselves off and we keep going. And that's huge. That is a huge support system to have, because I think all three of us have been there. I think all parents and probably everybody with FSHD has been there at one point or another. It's nice to have somebody to just say, all right, you know, lick your wounds a little bit, but now let's get up and keep going. So we'll continue to do that as well.
That leads me then to kind of the final question, but it's really going to be more generalized. You know, I want to really make sure that with the things I've asked, you graciously gave me a lot of information to kind of walk us through this conversation, but I don't want to miss anything. So is there anything that you want to make sure is heard that maybe we haven't talked about yet before we close it down? Nobody really. We covered it all.
I can reiterate a few things.
I love it. Yeah.
So I think everything was covered. Want to make sure that parents know that that we need involvement. If your child has not been tested, get them tested. Things are coming. You have to be involved. Be ready, because you don't want to have this opportunity. Oh, there's a phase three and happening right now, and you're scrambling. There's no way you're going to get your kid tested in time. So be ready for the trials, and do what you can along the way to support us to get there. And thank you again to you and everyone else who has helped us along the way. I'm so grateful to these two moms.
Yeah, absolutely. Allie, Kristen, anything else?
Mimic what Debbie says. You know, all of those are extremely important, and being involved and having each other's back and pushing one another forward and bringing different mindsets and different skill sets to the table to try and solve this huge problem is amazing to have the support and push forward. But we need more numbers. We need more people leaning in. We need more people sharing. Even if it's your own Facebook page or Instagram page, show your life and tag pharma in it. Tag the researchers in it. tag the community in it. Like, you know, let's just get loud as a society.
I like that. Get loud.
Yep. So unfortunately, I do have to jump, Tim. Sorry. I
also, hey, thanks for joining us. Yeah.
Thank you so much for all of this.
Of course.
And I just want to say, we are here. We're not going away. We are tenacious, and we won't stop until our kids get treatment. So join us, and we will get there. We will.
Awesome. Love that, Allie. Well said. We're not going away.
Not going away. Not going away. I hope not. I hope not. We need you. We need you, like, you know, more than ever. So thank you all for joining us in this conversation. Well needed. We'll revisit in the future. So get your calendars out. Women, we got to schedule something in the future. You got to see where we're at. Keep up the progress. You bet.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
So that was a, you know, remarkable meeting, conversation, like none other, in my opinion, having Allie, Debbie, Kristen all in, and I was, you know, from all different parts of the country, joining together with the common goal of, yes, of course, a cure. But like I was saying within the conversation, like, what if we just kind of slice this down? We all know, you know, obviously what that is, but we have to get there. So like, immediately, what do we need? And then the next and so forth. So you were tethering these moments of these goals of progress, of hope. And then you get to that cure. You know what the end goal is. You mark that down and you go, okay, now how do we get there? Right. And I believe that these women are doing that, doing it together. Support was talked about. Minutes matter. I can't help but feel the anxiety of that myself. I mean, I do have two boys. They're teenagers. I'm not sure, like so many parents out there, if they have it or not. But these women are fighting for even my kids, right? And others that you're not sure if they have it. You know, those families that are on the cusp because maybe a parent has it or a relative has FSHD or had it. And what does that mean for their kids? And it sounds like, yes, minutes matter. And then be ready. Be ready. Like, get them tested. Get your ducks in a row, as they say, so that you're ready. So when that phase three comes, you line up. Getting involved in trials has always been massively important for the community. I love the common sense theory in the beginning of the conversation saying, well, if we have the kids being tested, their progression is so much quicker. You can get a better baseline of what's happening. So if it helps kids with that faster progression, of course it would help an adult. So then why aren't we working that way? It's just very puzzling to me. What seems so common sense is not, I suppose, but it's not a us against them. And like me, I almost want to go that way, but I hear them. I hear Allie, I hear Debbie, I hear Kristen say it's not us against them. We just have to communicate and we have to let them know, you know, what do you need so you can help our kids and others. And that's really what this has been about. So this was really meant to be an educational forum for all of us that don't know a lot of what's going on. With the early onset non-ambulatory population of, you know, if they're 18 or even a little older, right? They were diagnosed when they were younger. Now they're adults and the progression continues. They can't be forgotten either. So there's these pockets of the community that we need to address. And I love the idea of having like a connect type conference for kids. And I think that's awesome. I would totally volunteer to help with that. If it started rolling, because I know the impact that kids have with each other when there's a commonality. You know, I work with kids a lot, and of all, you know, different interests. And I'll tell you, when you get them together in the common interest, or sometimes not the common interest, it is amazing what can be done. So if you get the kids together, and then maybe that's part of the lack of a better term, marketing campaign, you know, right? You video those things, you see how the kids are interacting with each other, you see how they're, you know, doing things within that day that is maybe a struggle. And that's, I think, what the FDA needs to see. And then these sponsors and the pharma companies, you know, one might help the other. So I love that idea of doing that on the alternate years. So a lot of great ideas happening. And I know Allie and Debbie and Kristen all have, you know, they have jobs, they have other things they do. They're volunteering their time. It's remarkable what they're able to accomplish. Allie representing this area of the community that we just talked about, you know, in the Netherlands, that's a huge step and a massive undertaking. I'm sure she's honored to be a part of it. But yet, you know, they have lives and they're concentrating on this. That cannot be overlooked. The dedication that takes is remarkable. So I really appreciate them all being on. And thank you all for listening. If you have questions about the episode, you want to be on an episode, you have other topics you want to talk about, like Allie reached out and said, hey, we really want to talk about this. We got it together. And I want to do that for you. That's really what this FSHD Straight Talk is about. It's about the community. I've said it time and time again. Love the scientists out there working so hard for my FSHD, you name it, you know, FSHD Canada, Solve FSHD, all these groups. Awesome. Man, you guys want to come on? I'd love to have a representative from those groups come on talk about their viewpoint of the community and what they're doing to help us all. So visit FSHDsociety.org. You can email me, FSHDradio@FSHDsociety.org is the best way to get a hold of me. I'm pretty responsive. I'll definitely get it set up. You know, Nally emailed, man, we started locking it down and making sure we could get everybody on the same Zoom and make sure that this episode happens. So I hope you enjoy it. Don't forget to rate, follow the show wherever you find your podcast. We appreciate it if you could do that and let the word out. If you like the show, if you don't like the show, tell me also how to improve. Always willing to take criticism. FSHDradio@FSHDsociety.org is the email. Thanks again for joining us. You've listened to another episode of FSHD Straight Talk. We'll see you next time.